In a world where shape-shifting werelords rule kingdoms and the line between man and beast blurs with the phases of the moon, Rise of the Wolf has captivated readers across generations. This fantasy epic by Curtis Jobling has been praised by critics for its unique blend of political intrigue and coming-of-age storytelling, earning it a place among the most influential young adult fantasy series of the past decade. The book's exploration of identity and power has resonated particularly with readers navigating their own transformative years, while its rich world-building has drawn comparisons to George R.R. Martin's work for younger audiences. Celebrity fans include actors Kit Harington and Maisie Williams, who have both cited the series as a favorite fantasy read. The story's protagonist, Drew Farran, has become an iconic character in fantasy literature, representing the outsider who discovers extraordinary potential within himself. Drew Farran's life begins to unravel on an autumn day at his family's isolated farm on the Cold Coast. While loading the wagon for his father Mac and brother Trent's journey to market, Drew senses something watching from the forest edge, a predator unlike any he's encountered before. The farm animals grow skittish, particularly Amos the horse, whose nervous behavior mirrors Drew's growing unease. The tension between Drew's parents is palpable. They argue in hushed tones about him, clearly keeping secrets. Unlike his brother Trent, who dreams of joining the military, Drew has no desire to leave the farm, a choice that seems to disappoint his father, a former member of the old King's Wolf Guard. Though times have changed under Leopold the Lion's rule, Mac has ensured both his sons are skilled with weapons. As his father and brother depart into a gathering storm, Drew's sense of foreboding intensifies. The day that follows is miserable. The sheep refuse to respond to his gentle herding, requiring him to shout commands for the first time. By evening, Drew falls mysteriously ill with fever and cramps. When confronting his mother about the family secrets, she responds cryptically, "You're not like your brother. You are different." Before she can explain further, the bay window shatters as something crashes into their farmhouse. The intruder reveals itself as a monstrous beast with oily black fur, massive claws, and blood-red lips filled with razor-sharp teeth. Despite his fever, Drew grabs his father's wolf's head blade and stands between the creature and his mother. The beast attacks, slashing Drew's chest before advancing on his mother. What happens next defies explanation. Drew's fever triggers a horrifying transformation. His body contorts, growing fur, claws, and a muzzle. In this wolf-like form, he attacks the creature, tearing off half its face before it flees. When his father and brother return, they find Drew holding his dead mother, covered in blood. Believing Drew murdered her, his father impales him with the wolf's head blade. Yet somehow, despite the sword lodged through his body, Drew remains standing, revealing the first glimpse of his supernatural nature. Months later, in the vast Direwood Forest, veteran ranger Hogan and his apprentice Whitley patrol the dangerous wilderness. When Whitley's horse throws him and he's left alone with a sprained ankle, the young scout faces the harsh reality that storybook heroes won't save him from the forest's dangers. Drew has been living wild in the Direwood since the tragedy, struggling with periodic transformations where his body grows claws and teeth. Though his appearance has become monstrous, matted hair, cracked skin, yellowed nails hardened into claws, he retains memories of his mother and former life. When he attempts to help the unconscious Whitley, he's violently attacked by Hogan, who breaks his arm and takes him captive. For 3 days, Hogan keeps the wilder men bound on a stretcher as they travel toward Brackenholm. Despite his broken arm, Drew's wounds heal unnaturally quickly. When Drew suddenly speaks perfect King's tongue, warning of approaching danger as howls echo through the forest, Hogan makes the snap decision to free him. As they flee through the forest, wilder men attack. When an arrow strikes Hogan in the shoulder, Drew faces a choice: run to safety or help his captors. Despite his instinct to flee, he returns to find a wilderman about to kill Hogan. Drew tackles the attacker with inhuman strength, and when bitten, partially transforms, eyes glowing yellow, nails becoming claws, before savagely counterattacking. Fighting to control his bestial nature, he knocks the man unconscious, then carries the poisoned Hogan to safety. The group escapes to the Dimling Road, where they're intercepted by friendly scouts. As they tend to Hogan, Drew bids farewell to Whitley, determined to return to the Direwood rather than risk capture in Brackenholm. His freedom is short-lived, however, as the Woodland Watch captures him and delivers him to Brackenholm's prison. Drew's imprisonment in Brackenholm introduces him to the remarkable tree city with its five great trees and bustling markets. From his cell window, he observes Lion Guard soldiers wearing red cloaks and lion breastplates harassing locals while the outnumbered city watch stands helpless. This glimpse of King Leopold's oppressive rule raises questions about Duke Berrigan's authority in his own realm. Drew's captivity takes a darker turn when Lord von Kasken, a rat lord serving Prince Lucas, subjects him to brutal torture sessions. Despite the agony, Drew's werewolf healing abilities allow him to endure and recover between sessions. The only time he betrays his true nature is when the torture becomes so extreme that his body begins to change. Jaws thrusting outward, teeth snapping, eyes yellowing, confirming to von Kasken that he is indeed a Therianthrope. Rescue comes unexpectedly when wild men attack the convoy transporting Drew. Hector, von Kasken's reluctant apothecary, frees Drew from his bindings. As they escape, they're aided by a hooded figure who reveals himself as Duke Berrigan. The Duke makes a shocking revelation. Drew is the son of Wergar the Wolf, the last of the werewolves. With this bombshell, Berrigan provides supplies and returns Drew's sword with the wolf's head pommel before departing with his son Brogan, leaving Drew and Hector to flee before dawn. For a week after their escape, Drew and Hector establish an effective partnership, Drew providing survival skills while the scholarly boar lord tends to camp duties. They travel cautiously by night, following the Red Wine River toward Redmire. Along the way, Hector educates Drew about werelord history and traditions, explaining how their essence passes through generations along paternal lines, and describing the various Therianthropes beyond the familiar lions, bears, boars, and wolves. Upon arriving at Redmire Hall, Drew and Hector are greeted by Baron Huth, Hector's elderly father, whose pronounced limp and weathered appearance speak to years of hardship. The Baron's warm embrace of his son reveals deep familial bonds, though the reunion's joy is tempered by the presence of Vincent, Hector's twin brother. While identical in appearance, Vincent's cold demeanor and calculating gaze create an immediate sense of unease. The brothers' interactions are marked by terse exchanges and loaded glances, hinting at long-standing grievances between them. The political complexities at Redmire Hall are heightened by the presence of Lady Gretchen, Prince Lucas's betrothed. Her striking beauty, flame-red hair, and piercing green eyes masks a dangerous nature. As a guest preparing for her royal wedding, she commands significant influence within the household, creating an atmosphere of careful diplomacy among the residents. Drew's confrontation with Lady Gretchen occurs in the castle's library, where her true nature as a werefox emerges through subtle signs, a slight elongation of her teeth, a predatory gleam in her eyes. When Drew refuses her demand to leave Redmire Hall, she reveals her political acumen, threatening not just him, but the entire Borlord family with accusations of harboring fugitives. Drew's passionate defense of commoners, citing specific instances of werelord oppression he's witnessed, culminates in a scathing critique of Prince Lucas's character, calling him a pampered princeling who's never known real struggle. The week at Redmire Hall settles into an uneasy routine. Drew's training intensifies under Gerard's strict tutelage, progressing from basic sword stances to complex combat maneuvers. Baron Huth's meditation lessons take place in the castle's ancient stone circle, where Drew learns to channel his transformative energy through breathing exercises and visualization techniques. His accidental discovery of Lady Gretchen singing in the castle's chapel, a haunting rendition of The Maiden's Lament, reveals her unexpected vulnerability, complicating his perception of her as merely a political threat. Drew's nights are haunted by increasingly vivid nightmares. The black beast from his mother's murder appears with growing clarity, massive, wolf-like, with distinctive silver-streaked fur. More disturbing are the dreams where his father Mac's familiar face transforms into something monstrous, calling into question everything Drew believed about his parentage. The peaceful facade shatters with Captain Brutus's arrival, leading 20 elite Lion Guard soldiers, their armor gleaming with golden lion insignias. Brutus's presence transforms Redmire Hall from sanctuary to trap. Vincent's betrayal unfolds with calculated precision. He had sent detailed messages to the capital about Drew's whereabouts and movements. Baron Huth's final moments are marked by tragic nobility, his partial transformation revealing tusks and bristled hair, before Brutus's silver-runed sword, its lion-head pommel glinting in the torchlight, ends his life with brutal efficiency, leaving his sons to witness their father's death and their family's honor destroyed in a single moment. As Baron Huth crumples to the ground, his final breath escaping in a ragged gasp, Drew instinctively seizes Lady Gretchen, pressing her close as a human shield against the advancing soldiers. The courtyard erupts in chaos as Drew locks eyes with Hector, signaling toward the shadowy jetty below. Without hesitation, Hector vaults over the stone balustrade, landing gracefully on the wooden dock where several small vessels bob in the dark waters. Above them, Brutus's enraged roar echoes across the courtyard as he orders his men to torch Redmire Hall, the ancestral seat of House Huth, now marked for destruction. Their escape vessel, a weathered river skiff with a single sail, cuts through the inky waters of the Redwine River. Hector maintains a death grip on the tiller, his knuckles white with tension as he steers them through the treacherous current. His face remains frozen in grief, the horror of witnessing his father's murder etched deeply in his features. The orange glow of Redmire Hall's destruction illuminates the night sky behind them, a beacon of their changed fortunes. During their flight downriver, Hector breaks his silence to outline their best chance of survival, the notorious Bot Marshes near the Wyrmwood. His voice trembles slightly as he describes the region's dark history, dominated by Vala the Wyrm, a were-serpent sorceress whose legendary powers kept even the most ambitious werelords at bay. Though Vala's presence has long since faded into myth, her fearsome reputation continues to render the area a no-man's land, shunned by both common folk and werelords alike. When Gretchen pleads for release, Drew refuses firmly, explaining that the wilderness teems with bandits and worse. Her safety, ironically, depends on staying with them. Hector suggests their ultimate destination should be the Cold Coast, where merchant vessels might provide anonymous passage to the southern territories. As they navigate through the night, Drew finds himself inexplicably transfixed by the moon hanging overhead, its presence both comforting and commanding, like a massive, half-lidded eye watching their flight. Noting Drew's fascination, Hector explains the profound connection all werelords share with the Eye of Bren, though none feel its pull more strongly than those of Wolfblood. This prompts Drew to inquire about King Wergar, whose legacy has been twisted by years of propaganda. Hector's account of the Wolf King paints a startlingly different picture from the monster of common legend. Wergar, he reveals, was a charismatic warrior king who inspired fierce loyalty by fighting alongside his troops rather than commanding from the safety of a distant throne. His soldiers would have followed him into the depths of hell itself, while citizens celebrated his victories with genuine devotion. However, Wergar's constant military campaigns, driven by an almost compulsive need for conquest, gradually eroded the patience of his fellow werelords. The fatal turning point came when Wergar led his armies eastward to wage war in Omir, leaving the Seven Realms dangerously exposed. Leopold, seizing this opportunity, launched a devastating assault from the south. Duke Bergen's forces fell before the onslaught, and Highcliffe, along with the throne and Wergar's family, fell into enemy hands. Upon the Wolf King's return, Baron Huth joined Bergen and other werelords in convincing Wergar to surrender, presenting it as the only way to spare his captured family from execution. This choice, made from love rather than cowardice, sealed both his fate and that of his bloodline. Until now. The trio arrives at Oakley, a substantial marsh town whose weathered buildings and narrow streets huddle behind an impressive protective dike, a testament to generations of engineering against the encroaching waters. The Mermaid Inn stands as a focal point of local life, its salt-stained walls housing a smoky tavern where fishermen and traders gather. Inside, mismatched tables scatter around a worn circular bar, while oil lamps cast flickering shadows across rough-hewn beams overhead. The establishment's distinct aroma of fish stew, ale, and pipe smoke creates an atmosphere thick with local character. After securing a cramped upper room for the night, they witness a disturbing scene unfold. Ebert, an elderly man with weather-beaten features and alcohol-glazed eyes, launches into an impassioned speech. His voice carries across the room as he denounces King Leopold's recent tax increases and fondly recalls the prosperity under Wolf's reign. Four militiamen, wearing Leopold's purple and silver, immediately converge on the old man, dragging him into the muddy street where they begin a savage beating. Drew's intervention proves swift and decisive. His combat training surfaces instinctively as he disarms the first two soldiers with fluid precision. However, when the third soldier's blade slices his arm, the stress triggers an involuntary transformation. Before the stunned crowd, Drew's form shifts, bones crackling, fur sprouting, into his massive wolf form, sending the militiamen fleeing in terror. Upon returning to human form, Drew faces a silent, watchful crowd. His desperate denials echo in the tense atmosphere. He pleads that he's merely cursed, afflicted with an uncommon illness, anything but their lost king. Yet his protests fall flat, especially when Ebert steps forward, his face now showing clarity despite his drunkenness. The old soldier's eyes fix upon the distinctive wolf's head blade at Drew's hip, its ancient runes catching the lamplight. With trembling hands, Ebert drops to one knee, declaring that the wolf's bloodline flows unmistakably in Drew's veins. He'd recognize a son of his anywhere. The incident leaves Drew conflicted. While satisfaction burns in his chest from defending an innocent man, anxiety gnaws at him over their compromised anonymity. His fears prove warranted when he later climbs the inn's creaking stairs to check on Gretchen, only to find her room deserted. A single piece of parchment lies on the unmade bed, its hastily scrawled message clear. Have gone, shall find own way to Highcliffe, do not follow. The ink is barely dry, suggesting her recent departure into the dangerous night. Drew and his companions arrive at Highcliffe Keep on a bitter autumn morning, where he endures the humiliation of being paraded through cobblestone streets lined with jeering crowds. Bound in specially crafted silver-lined stocks, an ancient device designed specifically to suppress the Ranthropos' transformation abilities, Drew stumbles forward as Captain Brutus delivers calculated lashes with a leather whip. Some spectators cheer at each crack of the whip, while others turn away, muttering prayers or showing glimpses of sympathy for the young prisoner. The imposing fortress of Highcliffe rises before them, its weather-worn granite walls stretching toward iron-gray skies. Inside the great hall, nobles gather between towering marble pillars that support vaulted ceilings adorned with intricate frescoes. Sunlight filters through massive stained glass windows, casting rainbow-hued patterns across the assembled court's finest silks and velvets. King Leopold commands attention from his position on the throne, a masterwork of carved obsidian featuring writhing serpents whose eyes glitter with embedded emeralds. The massive ruby crowning the throne's peak pulses with an almost supernatural glow. The king himself cuts an impressive figure, tall and muscular, wearing an iron crown set with black diamonds, his beard neatly trimmed and streaked with gray. Prince Lucas reclines on a smaller throne of polished oak, barely concealing his smirk as he watches the proceedings. Beside him, Gretchen stands in a lilac gown trimmed with silver thread, her face a mask of anguish as she witnesses Drew's degradation. When Leopold pronounces Drew's death sentence, to be carried out after the royal wedding celebrations, the Great Hall erupts in murmurs. Duke Bergen rises from his seat, his voice carrying across the chamber as he invokes the ancient codes of combat. Manfred of Stormdale joins the protest, producing a weathered tome that details the laws protecting werelords from execution outside of honorable combat. Their opposition creates visible tension in the court, with various nobles taking sides through subtle gestures and whispered conversations. In the depths of Highcliff's dungeons, Drew's cell is carved from solid rock and lined with silver-infused iron bars. Gretchen's clandestine visit brings more than just news of Duke Bergen's legal maneuvering. She reveals a truth that shakes Drew's understanding of his own identity. Queen Amelie, Leopold's current wife, is Drew's birth mother, having married the king after Wergar's death in what many whispered was a forced union to legitimize Leopold's claim to the throne. Meanwhile, in a secret meeting in Duke Bergen's chambers, nobles loyal to the old guard discuss Drew's heritage. Bergen points out the unmistakable features Drew shares with the late King Wergar, the same storm gray eyes, the proud set of his jaw, even the way he carries himself despite his imprisonment. Count Vega, keeper of the castle's historical records, produces documents proving Drew's connection to the throne, including testimony from the former scullery maid who raised him in secrecy, protecting him from those who would harm Wergar's heir. On the day of his execution, Drew is transported to the scaffold in High Square, where crowds gather with mixed emotions, some bloodthirsty, others solemn, remembering their former Wolf King with fondness. Forced to his knees before the block, Drew faces his fate with dignity, remembering Duke Bergen's words, "No more tears, give them nothing." Before Leopold's sword can strike, Lion Guard soldiers suddenly attack the king while another cuts Drew's silver bonds. Chaos erupts as some guards reveal hidden Wolf Guard tabards beneath their uniforms. Leopold transforms fully into his 9-foot werelion form, brutally killing the soldiers who attacked him before lunging for Drew. Drew finally breaks free of his weakened bonds and begins his own transformation, steel gray fur covering his skin, his jaw elongating into a wolf's muzzle. Despite his newfound strength, Drew remains outmatched by the werelion. The tide turns when Duke Bergen appears in his massive werebear form, accompanied by Manfred of Stormdale with his 3-foot antlers and Count Vega with his predatory smile. When Count Vega throws the wolf's head blade across the stage, Drew catches it and drives it through the lion's chest. Though not fatal without silver, the wound forces Leopold to retreat. Drew discovers the helmeted guard who freed him is his father, Mac Farron, mortally wounded. With his dying breath, Mac reveals that Leopold murdered Drew's real family and that Drew was adopted. He apologizes for believing Drew had killed his mother, and Drew forgives him as he dies. Consumed by vengeance, Drew follows Leopold into Highcliff Castle, only to find himself surrounded by hundreds of Lion Guard soldiers. King Leopold approaches with his Lord Chancellor Van Morton, whose glowing red eyes and clicking talons reveal a horrifying truth. He was the monster who killed Drew's adoptive mother years ago. In a desperate final confrontation on the battlements, Drew faces Van Morton as a mere human rather than in his werewolf form. The battle becomes increasingly one-sided as Van Morton crushes Drew's sword hand and methodically tortures him. In a final desperate move, Drew hurls a flask of spy oil at Van Morton, temporarily blinding him before kicking him backward into a fire. As the flames engulfed the were-rat, Drew reaches through the inferno to reclaim his father's sword, burning his own arm severely. With three remaining were-rats charging toward him and nowhere left to retreat, Drew makes a shocking decision. He simply falls backward off the castle wall into the void below, disappearing from sight as the raging were-rats are silhouetted against the inferno. This cliffhanger ending leaves readers wondering whether the last wolf has truly fallen or if his story is just beginning.